Thanks, Tim. So we're covering a series in the book of Micah. And it's an interesting book because the children of Israel were living a very religious life and doing their sacrifices and appeared to be religious. And yet God said to them through the prophet of Micah, you're getting it all wrong. You're specialising and spending your time in looking good, but you're physically not helping the people around about you and doing community with one another. And so we're looking at a whole stack of topics. And so we've looked at hope and despair last week. We've looked at justice versus injustice. And today we're going to be looking at wealth versus poverty. And so in our workplaces, in front of our families, in front of our friends, how do we handle what God has blessed us with in terms of blessing others? And so Ross has asked myself to give a bit of a testimony today in terms of how Hands and Feet receive their funds and the generosity of others that help us do that. Geary's going to share some testimonies about his travels around the world and what he's seen in different countries of the world in terms of wealth and poverty. And then Ross is going to come and talk about this from a biblical perspective and what that means to us. With the issue being, are we going to be like the Israelites who look religious, or are we going to do community and bless one another with the way that God has blessed us? So there's an amazing little passage in Acts chapter 2. Oops, sorry, I'm going too fast for the guys. And it says, all the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and unto the fellowship and to the sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper, and to prayer. A deep sense of awe came over them all, and the apostles performed many miracles and signs and wonders. And all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. Remember, there's about 3,000 people at this time, so it's not just a couple we're talking about here. They sold their properties and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshipped together at the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper, and shared their meals with great joy and generosity. And while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people, and each day the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. Sounds a bit like Utopia, doesn't it? And you think, is this what the church should be like? And then if you start thinking this through, how did this actually work? And did people sell their homes and not have anything to live in? Or did they sell from their excess that they had? Or a lot of really, really good questions around this type of passage. So I just wanted to share with you how we at Hands and Feet see money come to us. I'm going to give you three little examples. And so the first is we get money from churches. And so when we sign up a church to do Hands and Feet, we say to them, we would like it if you can give us $2 for every hamper that you hand out. So if you feed 30 people a week, if you could give us $60 a week, that would help us run our trucks and do all that type of thing. And so that's a fair bit of money when you look at it. In New South Wales, when churches do that, we receive about $100,000 a year. And so you kind of go, yeah, that helps run trucks, keeps electricity on and that type of thing. And so if a group is helping the church connect to their community, it's probably a good thing for the church to be responsible to that process. But interesting enough, we service about 50 churches a week in Sydney, in New South Wales. Not all of those churches give to us. In fact, there's one church who we've been serving for 5 years, and we drive a truck an hour every week there and back, so an hour there, an hour back. And I think in 5 years we might have got $300 as a one-off offering from them in the first month that they were a part of the organisation. And so there's a church that we've been exceedingly generous to help them connect with their community. They're growing in their community, doing great work, but they haven't seen the need to be generous to Hands and Feet to help us do the things that we do. And that's a hard issue for them. There are other churches, the church that we help over in Auburn, and we get about $900 a month from that church because of the impact that they see in their community, and they love what happens, and they rejoice and bless us because they're blessed through the work that God does. So that's one of the ways that we get funds for Hands and Feet, through churches saying, yes, we're going to support Hands and Feet as they go and do their process. The second way, and I might have told some of these stories, so forgive me if I have, we were given the challenge by Audi to open a new warehouse in Adelaide by Easter this year. And so we didn't have the funds in place and we hadn't really considered doing that. And so we prayed to God and said, will we go and open a warehouse in Adelaide? And so we had basically about 3 months to get this on the ground and running. So to open a warehouse, you need three things. You need food, you need churches that you can get the food out through, and you need about $200,000 to put a warehouse in place, to put a truck on the road, to put a cool room in place, and to meet all those needs. And so we looked at that and thought, Audi's got to be joking. So we went and looked at the opportunities that we had, and so we rang the churches in Adelaide that we had connections with, and we'd been there about 2 years ago, and when we raised this with them, would you like, they kind of went, not really interested, it's not our thing. But as we rang around the churches, there was this overwhelming response from the churches that says, if you hear, we will give out food. And we went, okay, that's one of the three things we can tick a box for. Audi said to us, if we're there, they'll give us 24 stores of food to pick up from, which is a huge amount of food for us. So we had two things in place. We just needed $200,000. And so we put emails out and nothing came, nothing came, nothing came. And so we're sitting there going, what do we do? And so we prayed and God gave me a verse in Proverbs and it said, you should honour God by using common sense and discernment. And I looked at that, whoa, common sense makes sense. I've got two out of three common sense that says don't do anything. But discernment said God had already provided two of these things, so would he provide the third? So we made a decision and the board made a decision that we would push ahead and move into Adelaide. So we rented a place because we couldn't buy one at that stage. We bought a truck. We started putting money in place to put the cooler in place. And the week before we moved in, I got a phone call from a gentleman and he said, I know it's I wouldn't give you any money, but I've decided because God's moved my heart to give you $140,000. And you go, well, that just about gets us there. And then I had somebody else about a day later say, we'll give you $45,000. So two individuals rang me as we're about to move into Adelaide and you stand back and you say, thank you, God. This is your heart, and we felt it was your heart, and we felt we should do this, and God honoured that. So God gives to hands and feet through churches, and he gives through individuals. There was another time, probably about 4 years ago when we were starting up, we were actually broke, and I had to pay some wages, and I'm looking at the bank going, I can't pay wages. And this cheque came in for $50,000 on the day I had to pay wages, and I looked at it, and I don't know the people that it came from. It was a company. And we tried to reach out to them. They've never responded to us. And we have no idea why they saw us and decided to give us $50,000. But they did on the day that we needed the money. And so that was God at work. And so God at times just steps in for us as well. So there's the church. There is individuals. And at sometimes God just does what he does like he did in that situation. And I've told you, I think, the stories of the bottles. We needed $1,400 to go and buy chickens for the city, and we bought the chickens even though I said we shouldn't buy them. And that day is we'd bought these chickens, I didn't have the money to pay for them. This truck turned up and there was about 12 pallets of drinks on the back of the truck that this guy started unloading, and so I raced down and said, I haven't got space in my warehouse for 12 pallets of drinks, just we can only take two anyway. He said, mate, they're unloaded, I'm not putting them back in the truck, they're yours. And so I was a bit depressed then, because when we get stuff like that, we actually have to put it in the bin, we can't use it, because this is actually out-of-date drink when I looked at it. And you say, what am I going to do with 12 pallets of out-of-date drink? And so young Reuben, who was seeing my stress levels rise and rise, said, give me 20 minutes, he disappeared. And he came back, and it was when the recycling of bottles had just started, and he came back and said, you can get 10 cents for every bottle. And we had 14,400 bottles in the thing. And when you multiply that by 10 cents, we had $1,440. So God gave us $40 more than we needed to buy the chickens. So we had a lot of volunteers for the next 3 weeks just tipping bottles down the sewer. And so I think what I'm learning, and this is a learning process for me, because like I've got to pay $35,000 on Monday. And at the moment, when I looked at the bank on Friday, we have $16,000 in the bank at hands and feet. And I go, oh God, not again. Why are you doing this again? And yet he's proved himself faithful and faithful and faithful time and time again. And so Monday, we'll see what happens with our money to see if we can pay our wages. So this is what I've learnt from these processes. And I encourage you to think these things through. I think we need to understand that as God's people, he's given us a value to be generous of what he has blessed us with. And so I don't think anybody would deny that he is blessed and we need to bless others. And it's a part of doing community. And in that passage read in Acts, it was all about them doing community together. And so I think we have responsibility in this space to help one another. I would strongly suggest that if you're a part of this community, then you have responsibility for this community, to give into this community, to support this community. We are a light here in how we go about serving God, and we're a light for this community. And so as a church, we have responsibility to support the work of this church. And then what about the other groups? I just jumped onto the ACNC this morning to see how many charities there are, in this community. There are 116 charities in the postcode 2148. And you look at that and you say, well, which of those do I give to? Now, I could put my hand up and say, you should give to hands and feet, and I'm not quite the right thing to do, is it? So what I would suggest, and what I've been learning to do, is if you have abundance, and this is not about giving out of what you don't have, this is about giving out of what you do have, I would suggest that you pray to God for him to clearly show you and burden your heart to what you should be giving to, and then give to that. And so it's not about folding under people's pressure to give, but it's about honouring what God has burdened your heart with to be generous in that situation. We're going to sing another song, and then Geary's going to come up and give us part two.
I'm an accountant, as most of you know. If I am the one who is managing that account, like seeing those accounts, seeing like 16,000 for a making of 35,000, I'll be very stressed out. But we know, Brad, you'll find maybe 20 more pallets somewhere. What Ross asked me is to share, living around poverty and plenty, what I have seen. Before I start my story, I would like to take a story from one of my other friends that came that when I was in Congo. I still be in touch with them. So the people, we see life in a different way in a Western world. But various parts of the world, we are not that privileged to see the world in the way that we are looking at the world. This family, my friend, his brother passed away. And by then, his sister-in-law passed away, means brother's wife also was not there. And then that family, the parents, the kids, four kids, lost their parents. And I was working as an accountant. And then this guy is working in the same company. And then he came to me with so much of a despair, like Rob was explaining last week. To me on that day, Giri, I need some loan. That's fine. So what's the loan for? Because an accountant had asks that question. I asked that question, and he gave me this story. His brother and, passed away, and then four kids are homeless. Somebody has to take care. The culture, and then living in poverty, and then people taking certain things in a certain way. I saw so many people in Western or even Indian culture not taking, when there is a problem, just pass by the problem rather than looking into the problem. And then this very guy who doesn't have money for himself to live for tomorrow or for live for today, and he's taking all these four kids into his family. That's the reason why he needed that loan. Lesson to be learned. So that made me to think about some many things. Most of the times I always felt, we are doing so much. We are doing, too often to certain people. And we don't have to open that much because people are taking advantage. But I think certain thing, and even story of hands and feet, day by day we look at it, that is not us to decide who is taking advantage and who is not taking advantage. I think that's God to decide. Keeping in that in mind, extreme poverty situations that I have seen within the colleagues that I work with, I would like to start sharing my story. I remember, I'll try to finish in 7 to 8 minutes. I'm aware of time. I lost my father when I was 7. My mother took, I came from Hindu background, and my mother took three of us, and three sons we are, and then taking care of us. And then she was working and then earning $400 in those days, like 1985, which is $8 today. And then we came from a very tough time. You know, like the first time that I wear footwear was when I was 12 years old. You can see how much of a poverty I was going through. Well, was it a poverty? I don't know that time that I was poor. But I can clearly say that I was poor. But I was, you know, like living the way, and then whatever the way that we were, and then gone through tough times, very, very tough times, wherein, you know, like at some point, when I was, I think, 10 years old, my doctor said my mom got some ulcers in stomach, and then they need to get operated. And then just then my mom came to Christ, and then she doesn't have any money anyway. And then, of course, my other relatives, they say, no, if we have to take care of you, you have to leave that village, leave your Christ aside, and then come back to us. My mom chose to stay back in the village. Whatever it happens, and I stick to God. And she was with God. And then, like, means she continually going to church and not respecting the family's culture and et cetera, and then going on. And then I was having this question, 10 years old boy, when I was going to school in the summer months. My Indian friends know how the summer months in India. You know, like in the month of March, walking on the roads without footwear, thinking on the road, what's about me if mom also passes away? Living in poverty. And then comes to my life, this existence of my village, my community, and my church, who graciously entered into my life. When I say my life, my family's life, my mom, my brothers, and everyone. What they did they have so much of money to take care of me, or take care of in the sense like at least to give some sort of support? No, not really. They were not having enough money for themselves. They are all like farm laborers and whatever the day-to-day wage laborers. But yet, you know, like whenever they work in a farm, and you know, like a vegetable harvest, say, you know, like some eggplant or something, I pass by, okay, they call me, and they tell me, okay, take this 1 kilo of X vegetables, give it to your mom, she will prepare something. Contribution, not because they were having rich, or they were having enough in their hand to survive, but yet, sacrifice. Fast forward, I always had, you know, like Ross asked me that he was trying to share this particular word, I just, you know, like all these 40 years of my life, like 39 years of my life, I'm 47 now, I'm talking about 8 years, when I was 8 years. All these 39, 38 years of age, when I was fast forwarding and rewinding in my heart, many things, thanks Ross for that, many things came into my mind. What sort of contribution that I owe to this community? Yes, I'm living in this country, part of few ministries here and there, and wherever in this church, I'm coming to this church for the last 9 years, 10 years. But I always felt this community is part of my life. More than my family. When I say more than my family, I'm intentionally telling that because they are like family. Of course, I'm not comparing my own family with that family. But when there is any requirement comes in their lives, be it health reasons. On the other day, in 2016 and 17, I was having troubles myself. A few of you guys know. I have invested some money into business, and that business a disaster. Being an accountant, didn't see the accounts properly. And the business has gone disastrous, and then gone to deep trouble. Then came to, you know, like when Brad was mentioning this story of 16,000, 35,000, then came a call from India. One of my close family friend's son got a brain tumor or brain issue and had to get operated. Where can I get money? I never had any clue. And then I always had this sense of responsibility to these families and then community, and God provided. And then we had to forego some savings that we had, and then whatever the money that we have to invest, and then we had invested. I'll let Ross deal with these points because I believe that he's... What did we do for all these years from our family? And Rajita, in back of me, to supporting in all the things that I was doing. I always felt for the community wherein these Hindu families and then Hindu people, all my close friends and families, how can I help them? How we have to help them as a family? Because God had given plenty now. When I say plenty, I don't have 200 millions, don't think that, but I do have a plenty comparatively from a personal perspective of not having a footwear to wear when I was 12 years old until my 12 years of age. And then today, I do have plenty, no doubt. So what, in which ways that we can, that's what we started thinking as a family. And then the, always, of course, personal responsibilities, health issues, and all these problems we have to take care. And then we always wanted to be part of them in a spiritual way as well. That's where we started, and then that's the church that we have. We were able to contribute to the establishment church. The church is growing now. We have around, you know, like that church started with two people. You know, like a face-to-face, one of my friend, another, and then his wife, and other friend, and then his wife. Four people, you know, like kneeling down and praying in a place like this, and started the church. The church is having 65 to 70 people in the church now. And then the church pastor, which is my close friend, one day asked me, we have few people doesn't have Bible, we have to buy the Bible. Okay, so we bought Bibles. Okay, so how many Bibles we have to buy? 30 Bibles we have to buy. Okay, so... And then weird idea, like some of us, we have very weird ideas, so very large dreams. And then all of a sudden, after 3 days, he called me. No, he never had any phone, and etc. I called him, and then he said, no, you know, I'm getting this feeling of distributing Bibles to entire village. All Hindus, around 2,700 houses, he wanted to distribute the Bibles, not the 30 Bibles. And I said, is it, you know, like a wise to distribute the Bibles? Because you may get so much of a position. That's my problem. Even if they want to hit me, let them hit me. I know, you know, like, because there are many arguments on any other thing. So if you are happy to distribute, you know, like he sent me a few photos at that particular point of a time. One old lady, so happy she never saw Bible in her life. Is it fulfilled, the investment of buying these Bibles? Because we took some... We had to go four to five centers to, you know, like extract these Bibles because no center got these 3,000 Bibles in one place. 3,000 Bibles we distributed in that village. Many people blessed. Yes, few people, you know, like hesitate to take them, and few people very aggressive, and then he handled it, that troop handled. God blessed the village. Yes, definitely the blessed village. Few people came to Christ, and few people at least... They respected the word rather than just neglecting it. And then this is another church that we have established in 2012, wherein that is within my own family, wherein my mother came from, my uncles, my aunts, and all these people. Everyone were not having any introduction to Christ. But now they just come whenever we all be there, they always will be there. Whenever the Sunday comes in, they join there. And then I never thought few of my family members will come to Christ, but around 14 to 15 people came to Christ. Is your riches, oh, plenty, is being helpful in the ministry? Yes, of course, that's the whole purpose. And are you remembering your initial stage of your life? Yes, that's what the responsibility is. But of course, there is always an argument, you know, like spending this much of money on certain things, is it every penny is being useful? That's none of your business, because it's none of your money. It's not your money that you are spending, it's God's own money. And then there is another church that we have established. We got five churches that we are part of as a family, and then church established in 2014, and just 14 to 15 people every week, they meet there. And then there is, you know, like in 2017 when we all went as a family, and then this is another church that we just, recently we built another church. We're part of building another church. So like five churches, and they keep praying for us. That all what I am trying to say is, when you don't have money, also you can be faithful, like how my village was faithful to me. When you are richer, when you have enough money to share, you have to be open. And then you have to share that plenty to the people who are in need. And then, of course, if you always, it is better to have a godly flavor to it, which will bring glory to God. May God bless this word.
Number three and the last one. Welcome to Gerard and Karen Bradbistad. So our Singaporean, Sri Lankan, Indian mix, who haven't been in church for an awful long time, have turned up today, and so we're pleased to see them. Thank you. Well, thanks, Brad, and thank you, Giri, as well, for just giving some background to the way they live their lives in the context of wealth and poverty. My job is basically to share with you what the Bible says about it, and so I'm using this example that Tim read to us, and not the whole lot, because the two chapters in 2 Corinthians, chapter 8 and chapter 9, cover the whole gamut of giving. We've only got a short period of time, and so I would like to look at this little passage that Tim read. Now, little background of this is the second letter that Paul wrote to the church at Corinth. We're talking Greece. We're talking Corinth, down below Athens, just above the Mediterranean. And the little place, the region we're talking about here is Macedonia, which is to the north about 300 k's from Corinth. It was a region in that time. If you wanted to go there now, you'd go to a place called Thessalonica, or Salonica as we know it today. So Paul is writing, he's got this real burden for Jerusalem church, and it's interesting that Brad read that passage about what the church in Jerusalem was doing. And it had turned out that they were in a great deal of poverty, there'd been a drought, and as well, this sharing amongst the saints potentially could have caused problems for them. And so they were very, very poor. And Paul had this burden as he takes the gospel message out beyond Israel, around the Mediterranean, around the bottom of Turkey, and then over into Greece. He takes this message out and he presents the gospel, but as well on his heart is this desire to be supportive of the church in Jerusalem. And so there are times when he's writing in his letters and he says, about this collection that we need to make for the poor saints in Jerusalem. Now, he'd already told the church at Corinth that this was an issue, and they'd really became enthusiastic and had got some money together, but they hadn't sent it. And they were sort of sitting on their hands, you know, as far as this gift was concerned. And so Paul writes this second letter to them, and he points out this example of the Macedonian churches, the believers in this area. Now, Macedonia is the area of the Philippian jailer. You remember the earthquake and they're singing hymns, and it's rather traumatic. They've been preaching the gospel and they've ended up in prison. And this area of the spread of the gospel into Western Europe almost, this was quite difficult for them. It was a very, very hard time for the apostles as they were doing that with Paul and Silas. And so Paul sees this church planted and sees it growing, especially the one in Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea. And he He wants to use these churches because these are the ones who've collected money to send to the poor saints in Jerusalem. Now think about this. Where's Jerusalem? It's thousands of kilometres away. They're not Gentiles. They're not pagan Gentiles who are over there. They're Jews. And this group of people right over thousands of kilometres away are willing to give cross-culturally and willing to give from what they have in their situation. And so Paul talks about the remarkable Macedonians. And the first thing that he says about them is that God enabled them to give. Now, we've heard two illustrations already of how God has enabled Brad and God has enabled Giri and his family to give to various Christian ministries throughout the world. And he says to them in chapter 8 and verse 1, "And now, brothers, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches." He gave them a special ability. And so that is basically the opening statement. And he's talking to the guys in Corinth who are sitting on their hands as far as their giving is concerned. And he says, "I want you to know about these people. These people are remarkable because of the way that they've allowed God to work through them." See what he says in verse 2, "out of the most severe trial." So Giri's talking about trials and situations that were very difficult for him in his life, "out of the most severe trial." And then there's this contrasting statement, "their overflowing joy." And then he goes back to, "and their extreme poverty." And then he goes on, has basically welled up in rich generosity. Now, they were poor. And Giri mentioned that it was the church who supported him, but it was with a handful of whatever from the garden. And this church, basically, these churches were poor and in very, very difficult circumstances, but they were prepared to be generous with what they had. They didn't have much, and their lives were very, very difficult. And there's a point that I want to make from this, and it's one that I've got a few takeaway points for today. When you think about it, there's always someone more needy than I am. Now, I might think that I am poor, but there is someone always more needy than I am. And I think that's the first principle that we can take on from this example of the Macedonian churches. Their difficult circumstances didn't hinder them from giving. Their difficult circumstances didn't hinder them. It's interesting that Giri mentioned the fact that he was challenged about giving in Congo. And I mean, Africans have taught me more about giving than anybody else in this world. As we have lived in Africa for a good number of years, it was the Africans. And one name that comes to mind is my friend Rebecca. She was a widow. Well, she wasn't a widow. Her husband had left her and married a best friend. She was bringing up four children plus a grandchild. And she came to our training centre and was there for us and became a leader in our training centre. Now, Rebecca was just an ongoing example of giving out of poverty and difficult times. And I always think of her lovingly because I take off my hat to the way she was prepared to give in this particular way. Her difficult circumstances didn't hinder her. Now, Paul goes on about the Macedonian churches and he says, he gives a number of things. If he was writing a reference for him, that he gives just three points that he would like us to understand about them, his testimony about them. The first thing, we've had this over a little bit already, they gave generously. And it says there in verse 3, "For I testify they gave as much as they are able and even beyond their ability." Now, that's that special grace. I mean, Brad is giving more than he's able because God's pushing it in the other end. And Giri as well had to take steps with his family to take risks, if you like, and to give more and even beyond their ability. But it's the next point that comes through here that I feel is probably the most important thing about my attitude to whether I should give. And it's not about the amount, as was the case with these poor people. It's actually about the cost. It's to do with, what am I prepared to do without? I remember one of a gate guy in Zambia, and I was talking about giving at the training centre, and we were just talking about it, and he was really poor. And I said, well, he said, oh, I'm too poor to give. And I said, well, just a minute. I said, well, I was probably a little bit unkind because he was very poor. But I said, how many bottles of Coke do you have a week? And he said, oh, I have three. And he said, I also buy a ticket in the lottery. Now, it was called Quatchamania there. It was a very, very small amount of money, but it was sort of got the locals in, as you can imagine. And so I said to this guy, but could you go without one Coke? Could you go without your Quatchamania? And so regardless of how poor he was, and he was poor, abjectly poor, there were things in his budget that he could go without. Now, we are wealthy, relatively speaking. Could I go without the overseas trip? Could I go without the bigger house? These are big budget things that we have that we should really consider and think about as we as Christians consider the need for others that God has asked us to look after. And so these guys gave generously. It's not about the amount, it's about the cost. And so what am I prepared to go without? Remember the widow in the temple. Mark describes her that Jesus said about this lady, she gave all that she had. And she didn't have very much. It was only a halfpenny in those days, that sort of thing. All right, the second thing that Paul wants to point out about them is that they gave willingly and in a way spontaneously. They didn't stop to think, is the implication of this. Entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the saints. It was sort of unexpected. It was a surprise that they would do this because they were very poor and they were very disadvantaged. I mean, as I think about this, I think about, you know, in the days at school when you were choosing, you picked two captains for the teams that were going to play cricket or soccer or something, and so you'd line up, everybody would be lined up, and you'd have these kids that would be saying, pick me, pick me, pick me. And, you know, often they were the ones who were the worst players, you know, but they were wanting to say, pick me, pick me. But they felt that they had the ability. And even with the old sort of lines that you have for you lining up for volunteering for something, and you see it on the movies that, you know, we want two men to volunteer and all these guys stand back and there's two guys left doing it. They weren't like that. They were the ones who were standing forward and coming out and saying, pick me, pick Paul, pick us, pick us. We don't have much, but we're really, really... it was their attitude. They gave willingly and spontaneously. And then the third thing that he wanted to point out to them, which I think is the crux of the matter, in verse 5 he says, but they gave them, and in some ways he says this was completely unexpected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us in keeping with God's will. And as people who believe in Jesus sitting in this church, I mean, that is the issue, isn't it? Gary mentioned that, look at, and even, yeah, I think it was Gary, you said, it's basically God's money. I mean, as believers, he owns everything. And he says, you use it on my behalf. And so we are the ones who are to be the stewards of all the things that he has given us and to be accountable to him for it. And the bottom line is, have I dedicated myself to the Lord and basically to his people? Because he says to Paul himself. And so there's a strong message there. And if we get the grounding right, the dedication to the Lord right, this overflowing joy that came out of these people without anything is the enthusiasm that we need for what of what we have been given and the requirement that God has on us to be supportive of others. And so in summary, before we go to communion, four things that I think we could take away. First of all, the Macedonian example. There's always someone more needy than I am. The next thing, what am I prepared to go without? Am I an enthusiastic giver? Or am I like Scrooge? Am I a dedicated giver? Have I given myself to the Lord and to his ministry? Now, we're going to use this slide again for communion. And I'll just read these verses because I'll just close this down and then we're going to sing a song. And then if you're a visitor to this church, normally we have a time of open worship. And so this verse that is here is to basically encourage us in an area to think about worshipping, because just a little later in chapter 8, not very further along, Paul says this. He says, well, I've given you the example of the Macedonian Christians, but what about the example of Jesus? What status did he have? And this is ironic. It is quite different from the way that we're talking about our own giving. So 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 9, and this will come back up after we sing our song. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. And Paul, right at the end of chapter 9, says, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. And so we're just going to sing a song, and then we'll have some open worship, and then we're going to remember Jesus in appreciation for what he has done. So let's sing a song and feel free to involve yourself in worship.